This is an ABC podcast.
What was the writer Richard Flanagan saying 20 years ago, I wonder? Hi, it's Kate Evans here from The Bookshelf, RN's weekly fiction review program. And we've scoured the RN archives for interviews with some of Australia's most significant authors. In 2001, art critic and writer Bruce James spoke with Richard Flanagan for RN's Arts Today about his latest work of fiction, his third novel, Gould's Book of Fish, a novel in 12 fish. It's a terrific title, isn't it? And remember, by this stage, Flanagan had already made quite an impact with Death of a River Guide and The Sound of One Hand Clapping. With those, he'd already earned a place in Australian literature. Back to his third novel, though, reimagining the world and vision of colonial artist and forger William Gould. But this is one of those books that's also an impressive object, printed in 6 different coloured inks, reflecting the various fluids Gould used to write his manuscripts, as well as particular typefaces, colour plates. And so Bruce James began by asking Richard Flanagan how he convinced the publisher to produce such an elaborate book.
Folly, I think, Bruce. They were terrific. I went to Nikki Krister, who's the publisher at Picador here in Australia, and I put the idea of the Book of Fish 3 years ago, and I said that I wanted to try and do a book unlike any that had been done here or anywhere else in the world, and I wanted to show that implicit in books might still remain the universe, that novels still had this infinity of creative possibilities. And to do that, I wanted to do a book that used colour. I'd just come off directing a film and I'd been intrigued by the way you could use colour to help tell story. And I was rather miffed, I suppose, at all the thin cant that was about how, older forms of storytelling like novels were dead and creatively moribund. And I wanted to use technology to show that, a whole lot of new things could be done. Anyway, she was wonderful, and she came completely behind the idea and set me to work with a very good designer, Mary Callahan in Melbourne, with the production people at Picador. And we came up with the design specs for the book before I'd written a word, because there was no point doing a book like this if we couldn't sell it at the same price as normal novels. So it really is something that reflects very well on Australian publishing.
And it's pretty much a slap in the face for Bill Gates, isn't it?
Well, Bill notoriously said that his last great ambition was to see the death of books before his own demise. And I suppose I had the sort of foolish ambition of a writer and hoping to show that was wrong through my own work. I'll probably fail completely, but that was my intent.
Well, I doubt that very much. I mean, I think the book is its own argument, but it is book as argument. It's almost book as weapon. As well as that, it's kind of book as a bit of magic. It seems to be in a tradition of magical books. Is that right?
Well, I wanted to reconnect with that older tradition, that great wild dreaming tradition of novel writing of the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries of Cervantes, of Lawrence Sterne's, Tristram Shandy, books that weren't so hung up about formal composition, formal technique, but which just dared to go anywhere and take the reader with them. Because it somehow seemed to me that perhaps this might be truer to the Australian experience, that oddly, although our experience is large and generous, we'd taken on the form of modern prose too quickly and readily somewhere in the late 19th, early 20th century, and it seemed wrong and inappropriate for our experience. So I wanted to try and write a book that harked back to these great tragicomic, wild, mad books of Rabelais and so on. So, yeah, I did want to try and write a magical, wild, nightmarish, dreaming sort of book.
Well, you've done that, but on this program yesterday we had Guy Rundle on, and he was bemoaning the proliferation of contemporary novels, and most of them he thought were, doomed to be remaindered, or at least, very poor sellers. And he likened bookshops, and this phrase struck me, as places or to places that were filled with aquariums. Each book he saw as being a kind of separate, self-sufficient, impenetrable world, and maybe even an unnecessary world. But I guess with Gould's Book of Fish, you wouldn't reject the idea of a book as an aquarium.
Well, I would, in that I wanted a book that was like the ocean, and I wanted people to feel they might escape with the fish into that sea and swim away with them. I didn't want a book in which people were imprisoned into one thin creative jail. I wanted a book in which readers felt that they were accomplices in escape, and that I didn't want the book to be narrowly defined. I try and write books that are completely accessible, but I think to do that you don't write down. You know, you must try and win the reader sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, but you must always treat them as being smarter than you. The other point that you allude to about there being too many books, there have always been too many books. They're very few good books, but I think that was always so. I don't know why people suddenly seem to think that our situation is any different than it was 80 years ago or 200 years ago. I don't think it is that different.
Well, Richard, let's get to Billy Gould, who's your version of William Gould, the forger artist. You approach him not as an art historian, fair enough, but when you first saw the Gould illustrations of fish in the Old Port Library, what was your response?
Well, I was very moved by them because they had this oddly Hieronymus Bosch quality about them. They were at once very clearly fine natural history studies of fish, yet they had these oddly human faces that were at once full of a great love and pity and also a great humour, you know, that they were taking the piss. And it fitted with a sort of book that I'd long wished to write that was both comic and sad and loving all at once. So I... But my initial response was that this was quite extraordinary art and that it was too easy to dismiss it as the crude jobbing work of a drunk journeyman, which is what the real William Gould most certainly was. And somehow in this crude art of a rude man, something much more extraordinary had happened. And the fact that it had the power to move me nearly two centuries later made me think that if I could just dive into the eyes of those fish, I might discover some much greater truth, not just about the world in which they were painted, but perhaps about the world in which I now lived.
And you chose 12 of the fish. There were many more to choose from. Why those particular 12, do you think?
They just in the end served the purposes of my story the best, and they were the ones that seemed to me to have the most character, I suppose. But I did have an interchange bench. I sort of was subbing on mottled lings and half-dead sort of dog sharks right up until the end. But there was more story about them. There was more character about them, so I ran with them. You know, it intrigues me how often you can find art in the most strange, benighted places, but... nobody wants to recognise it or see it. And there is a certain amount of convict colonial art that comes out of this society of great violence and great horror, which never speaks directly of it and yet somehow captures its utter essence. The gargoyles that are carved into the old Ross Bridge here in Tasmania by an unknown convict stonemason, which are just the most anguished, horrific images of suffering. So I'm always searching for those sort of works, those strange or sometimes anonymous, sometimes near anonymous works that have this great power.
You mentioned gargoyles there on the Ross Bridge. In the novel, everyone seems to be a gargoyle or a grotesque or an exaggeration. There are no colourless people. Everyone's big and strong and strange.
Well, I enjoyed them, you know, and I suppose I've always seen life in that way. I've always been, you know, everywhere I've lived, all the people I've met have always assumed larger proportions in my own mind than perhaps they do in other people's. What you say is true, but perhaps it just really indicates the way I view life rather than a literary sensibility. But I don't think life is small. I think life is much larger than we're allowed to give it credit for. I hate the diminishment of experience that so much of the world seeks to impose upon us. Life is extraordinarily large and much more extraordinary than we're normally allowed to acknowledge. And perhaps novels are good at the, in that they allow us to do that occasionally, allow us to remind ourselves that, that humanity is bigger and better than what we're allowed to know.
Richard, you say, and your publicists take it up as well, that, that this book is about love, but it's also about death too, I find. I mean, there are any number of sticky ends in the novel. Is it necessary for characters to die in a really good book?
What was it Raymond Chandler said? When you don't know what to have on the next page, bring in a character with a gun. I don't know what my books are about. You see, the bizarre thing about having a book come out is that you're expected to go out and make grand pronouncements glossing your own work, about which, if you have any humility, you must admit you're largely clueless. And what's interesting is what readers tell you about your own work, which is always much more insightful, much more pertinent, because reading is, in the end, a far more creative and intelligent act than writing. Having met several writers, I think I can say this is utterly true. And so when you say something like that, it interests me. But whether I can't tell you whether that's true or not, I mean, I wouldn't know. People find all sorts of things in my book that I never knew were there. That merely means that the book's come alive, and I'm grateful for that. I don't know whether they're about death or love or whatever.
Well, Gould is one of the noted 19th century artists of Tasmania. I guess John Glover would be another. I'm wondering whether you've had a look at the rediscovered Glover painting, which is now or recently on display in Hobart. The subject was Hobart and Mount Wellington.
I haven't gone to see it yet, but I like Glover a lot. I think he's just a much more truthful artist than most, but he is concerned to create a certain elegiac vision of Australia. And where I preferred someone like Gould is that there is about his work the horror and the violence of what happened here. That is, in the end, also an inescapable love for that same world. So I think there's somehow a larger humanity at work with Gould than there is in Glover, although his work in many ways technically is much less assured. It's often verging on incompetent. But there's something Walt Whitman wrote, that the shape of my words, nothing, the drift of them, everything. That's what I like about Gould. There's something in the drift of them that's quite extraordinary.
Richard Flanagan, speaking about his novel Gould's Book of Fish, a novel in 12 fish, in 2001 on the then Daily Arts program Arts Today. The interviewer was Bruce James. I'm Kate Evans, and don't forget, for interviews like this and for reviews and other conversations about the latest Australian and international fiction, make sure you follow The Bookshelf on the ABC Listen app.